Hello everyone, this is Kim here. We'll get started in just a second. Okay, let me go ahead and get started through the boilerplate stuff at the beginning. I included a link to the agenda, and so today we have Simone Ravioli to discuss the European credentialing landscape, so we're glad to have him and continue the discussion we started last week that was focused on education credentialing. The vocabulary taxonomy is a lot of the work happening, at least in the U.S., so now we're happy to stand that out. Let's see. So what we do, we have the IP note, scribe selection. We'll do some introductions and reintroductions, and then we'll turn it over to Simone to lead a discussion, and he'll leave time for Q&A as well. So let's see, the IP note, anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. And here is the, oh, thank you, Nate. I noticed you're already scribing. So yeah, we were about to get to that in a later section, but Nate saved us time. Some context on what Nate's doing, I wanted to point out, we're going to start rotating through scribes, so we'll make a list of regular attendees and then call on people in order so that it's not the same people having to scribe every time. So because we'll eventually call on you if you haven't done it before, just pay attention to what Nate is doing. He's typing the scribe alias and then sort of paraphrasing. Nate's a very good scribe, so he's a high bar, but sort of talking about, you know, what the speakers are saying. And whenever we get to a presentation, the scribe generally can be more lax because the presentation contents are in the minute notes. So you don't have to scribe everything in the notes. You're only trying to capture key conversation that that's outside of what's on the presentation. So with that, thanks to Nate. That's very much appreciated. And so I'll continue with the IP note. So as I was mentioning, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items need to sign the IP agreements, which involves joining the CCG group. I included the link to that. You may need to request a W3C account first, and that's just a simple process to do that by, let's check if there's noise. Okay, thank you, Nate. Everyone should try to mute themselves. If you're not talking, we're getting some feedback. Okay, that was a lot better. Thank you. Okay, and then so the lastly, making it through the IP note, the full text of the W3C Community Contributor License Agreement is here if you want to inspect that before signing up to join the W3C and the CCG group. So next step, call notes. Second, let me, okay. These minutes and an audio recording of everything said on the call are archived, and the link for that is right here. We use IRC to cue speakers during the call as well as to take minutes. So I won't include the link into IRC because people in IRC are already there, but if you have questions about that, please either check the meeting invite, the email agenda that went out, or if you have questions, just speak up and we'll try to address it. So all attendees should type present plus, as Snow just did right now, and I'll do so the word present space and then the symbol plus, so that we know that you're here, and that will get your name on the attendee list in the transcript. In IRC, to add yourself to the queue, type Q plus, that's the letter Q, the symbol plus, no space in between, to add yourself to the queue. And you can add an optional reminder, Q plus, to mention something, and that's Q plus space, the word to, and then whatever you want to remind yourself of. And that will give you an optional reminder of what you wanted to talk about, which is useful if you're trying to wait to let the presenter finish. If you're not on IRC, just ask to be put on the queue and we'll add you. And then please be brief so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can always queue plus again. And the meeting is held by voice, not IRC. So off-topic IRC comments may not necessarily get reflected in the final transcript of the call. So if you're contributing to the conversation, make sure it's captured by voice as well. So this is the point where we usually do scribe selection, but Nate's already done that, so he saved us some time there. So we will move on to introductions and reintroductions. So I noticed we have quite a few new people on the call. If you're new and want to introduce yourself and you're on IRC, please add yourself to the queue, type Q plus, and I'll call on you. Otherwise, feel free to speak up, and hopefully not everyone all at once, but we'd like for you to introduce yourself. Okay, I'll call on people who are maybe new to this call specifically. Anthony Camilleri, could you introduce yourself? Or actually, we have someone on the queue, and Anthony's introducing over chat. Lewis, please introduce yourself.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, Kim. My name is Luis Ariño, and I am the CIO of a public university here in Spain. And today I am attending as the convener of the diploma's use case on the European Blockchain Service Infrastructure.
Great. Thank you for joining us. Snow, you're up next.
Yes, my name is Snorre, and I work at Diwala, a company that focuses on skill identity, particularly in the Pan-African continent. We are currently working out of Uganda, where we are working with schools and employers to build a better way of proving what you've done and being able to be hired.
Great. Thank you, Snow. And Philip, MIT, you're up next.
Yeah, my name is Philip Schmidt. I'm here at MIT. I work at the Media Lab, but also in MIT Open Learning with Kim on the Digital Credentials Consortium, and I've been working on digital credentials for many years.
Thank you, Philip. And Phil Barker, can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name's Phil Barker. But I work on several US-led projects, and I'm here to hear what Simone has got to say about the credential landscape in Europe.
Great, thank you for joining us. So I know a lot of people joined to hear Simone's presentation. So with that, we have a good 50 minutes for his topic and any Q&A. So Simone, I'll let you lead. And if you want, I'll also let you manage the queue. If you don't want, just let me know and I'll chime in if there's a lot of queue backlog and things like that. But otherwise, you know, feel free to just lead the discussion. And so with that, we have Simone to talk about the European credentialing landscape.
Thank you, Kim. Can you guys hear me okay?
There's a little bit of echo, but otherwise I can hear you fine.
All right. I guess that hopefully that's not too bad. So I'll be sharing a link in a second in the chat. It is a document that we can use for reference links as I go through what I want to cover.
Simone, are you still there?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, sorry, it went on mute. All right,
okay.
So share the link. Just anyone in the call, signal where you are from, if from Europe, please. Okay. All right, so what I wanted to do is take this opportunity to share with the group a bit around the credentialing landscape in Europe, at least as I have experienced it in the last some 12, 13 years. And this is by no means intended to be a comprehensive record of what happened, just what I have had an opportunity to work on. And in fact, I know that some of the people on the call have contributed to this work and are still doing it. And so this could be turned into something more comprehensive with the help of everyone, and maybe it will feed into a more global endeavor around mapping credentialing across the world. And the way I thought I'd go through it is just to list and quickly address some of the technical specs that I've seen surface in Europe over the years, and then mention some of the high-level European initiatives that are really pertinent to what we're talking about here, as well as looking at some of the projects, whether they have been funded by the Commission or were more grassroots, that are relevant. And open up for a discussion and see, you know, what could be some next actions to make this, I guess, a continuous effort. How's my echo doing at this stage, Kim?
It's still there, but I can hear you fine, and Nate seems to be catching everything you're saying. So sounds good. Thank you.
Okay. So I'll continue. So the space is really is lively, I'd say, and I wanted to give you a sense of some of the initiatives that really happened early on, starting around 2000, and the stuff that is in the document, some of it is out. Kind of a collective memory of what happened, leading into more recent stuff that is probably more interesting. And so, you know, Europe is quite a, I guess, a union, but a fragmented one, and the initiatives around defining a way to describe student data, or course data, have been appearing in different parts of Europe. The first one that I'm aware of, we're probably started in Norway with an initiative known as Course Description Metadata, which ended up having a French application profile of the same thing, and was then picked up in the UK by JISC, which is an important organization over there, and started to work on their own version of this course description metadata, which they ended up calling the XCRI, the Exchange of Course Related Information. Yes, roughly at the same time, initiatives were going on in Germany to describe still learning content and in Sweden. Because of this fragmented landscape, at some point, the European Committee for Standardization, known as STEN, C-E-N, took on an initiative to try to harmonize, you know, these existing initiatives and started a project, project work called MLO, Metadata for Learning Opportunities. And this is where I really had an opportunity to get my hands dirty with this. The idea was to produce a specification, you know, that could be used in supporting mobility of students, particularly within Europe. And as you may be familiar with, student mobility in Europe is really facilitated by the Erasmus program. It's a funding scheme that provides scholarships for students to study abroad within Europe, at least in its original version. It's been very successful. So there was a need to really streamline or transform the Erasmus experience, the administrative Erasmus experience, in a digital way. And that was a successful initiative from a standardization perspective because it did produce a so-called European norm, which was this metadata for learning opportunity. As this was happening, the issue became more, was started to become around adoption. So there was some great work that was going to harmonize existing work trends in Europe, but the traction needed for this to really have an impact was not there. And this was when, fortunately, a group of implementers in the higher education space, particularly in Europe, these are student information system vendors, stepped into this conversation and provided, I guess, that necessary conduit into the market. And so they were able to contribute to the evolution of the specification. And then in doing so, inherited a responsibility to take this to market, or at least use it in their mutual system, particularly when it came with, you know, to support the Erasmus program. So MLO was the first, I think, a milestone in doing this, and it was a proper standard, right? MLO did stimulate another stream of work, which became known as the European Learner Mobility, still within STEM. And if the previous MLO really was a stack to describe learning opportunities, so advertising them, European Learner Mobility really added that piece, the part, the achievement piece, which was extremely important. And so these were two standards that became very important for the evolution of this conversation in Europe, because there have then this new specification were picked up by individual organizations, and in a very grassroots, collaborative, bottom-up approach, they started to what if, you know, we as an organization implemented the specification and piloted it. I say we because at the time I was working for a consortium of universities in Italy, and this effort was really just an open effort. There was no funding behind it. It was the resources of the individual organizations that went into addressing this interoperability issue. And so a few initial pilots in terms of connecting student information systems run, and they were looking to adopt the available specifications. So this really lasted for a few years without really too much uptake, although that idea, the seed of the available standards and the traction created by some of the vendors raised this issue, and for some time it had become a lobbying exercise toward the European Commission to create appropriate funding schemes that would support this kind of work. Because up until that time, there was really not much funds available within the Erasmus program to support, I guess, technical projects. Most of the technical activities or research intensive happen in Europe within different funding programs. Called now known as the Horizon 2020 and another instruments, but there wasn't really a fit program for that. So the let me stop for a second and see if I have everyone on board. I've been looking up for the document. Can I move on?
Let me check the queue real fast. I haven't seen anyone yet. No, it's empty. Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah, great. So what happened was that at some stage, the European Commission really picked up on what was happening and started to create a couple of opportunities for funds to be allocated to this kind of work. And the first two projects funded and supported by the European Commission in supporting mobility where the MREX one, I have references in the document, and what is known as the Erasmus Without Paper. They are similar in effort, but different in the way the model was implemented. But they both received two rounds of funding. And whereas MREX was a bit more technically focused, really on leveraging one of the existing specifications, the ELMO, known as ELMO, and MREX was natively learner-centric. So this was an early example of really a self-sovereign approach to giving access to personal data and to course-related data to support mobility. Erasmus Without Paper was politically positioned within the Commission, and it has found the favor of the European Commission. So it received a couple of additional rounds of funding, and it's still one initiative which is connected to the policies on mobility that will evolve over time. And as much as that it has really received a lot of visibility, there is a technical component to it, which is supposedly going to be able to leverage the work, the architecture made available by MREX, or which is the name of the project that is implementing one of the standards that I mentioned. Now, worth noticing is that ELMO was a specification that had been taken and mapped against the task transcript. And so this was a first approach in trying to keep this credentialing movement together, particularly when it came to standards, and see if, you know, what was a standard in Europe could be mapped to a standard in the US. And so there is some documentation available for that. And that is, in a nutshell, I think what we should possibly go back to and continue to contribute into. So at this stage, you know, we got to a point where for a long time, this was not a super sexy thing, right, in the market. But a few of us that stuck with it really felt that this was an important thing to continue to support across organizations, as many of us have really moved from one organization to another, but still stuck with the principle and with the purpose of getting this interoperability piece done. And some of us, including myself, have had an opportunity to be exposed to what was happening across the pond, mostly in North America, where most of the movers and shakers in this space are, and where there was a lot to be considered, particularly because I think we agree that this is a global issue. And as much as, you know, a standard could be made anywhere in the world, you know, then adoption becomes the issue. But we live in a situation where there are competing specifications, you know, to do the same thing. And so the trick is, how can we reconcile that? Can we crosswalk among standards? And we believe that there is a piece of work that needs to be addressed there. Now, this was all kind of sitting quiet for a while before recently, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, digital credentials picked up momentum, also with the help of some hype in the technology space, particularly around blockchain. And so that now we are left with a clear use case in the education space for blockchain. And so that we revamped these conversations, and we're seeing the effects of it, particularly in the US, with the many initiatives that are springing up, and also with the parallel effort to try to keep it together. And so as I observed this and I had a chance to be part of this conversation, I've always felt that there was a need to represent what was happening in Europe in an informal way, with the mandate of some of the organizations behind the standards, you know, including the European Commission, but always as, you know, like as an independent expert. And this kind of led to this conversation today, where we are bringing this within you know, the work of W3C Verifiable Credential Group, and hopefully this could generate kind of a chain reaction so that we find the right people to keep this connected and come up with some work that supports kind of the harmonization or the crosswalking of the different specifications around the globe. Let me stop again here for a second, Kim, and maybe see if there are any questions or contributions.
There's no one on the queue, but thank you. This has really been fascinating, and I actually hadn't realized there was an effort to align with PESC already. And so to touch on what Simone is saying, you know, a combination is here, you know, we're trying to invite in the, you know, people who have more familiarity with the sort of content of the claim, and a lot of that work's happening in IEEE, CM4LTS. I think in the W3C world, we've been very focused on, you know, the credential wrapper or the verifiable credential in the ecosystem and protocols around that. So it's really exciting to have the expertise of people more familiar with the credentialing taxonomies. So yes, I plus one to his hope that we can keep some momentum going for a global interoperable standards. But yeah, with that, I don't see anyone on the queue, so keep pushing forward.
Right. So obviously, when you think about Europe, there is an expectation that the European Commission, so the higher authority, steps in and does something to stimulate the system. And I say that the stakeholders within the European Commission that are involved in this conversation at large are three different directorate generals. So the DGs are governance structures of the European Commission, and they are vertical pillars that look at specific areas. And so we have the DG for education that is involved. We have the DG for employment, which is involved. And we have DG Connect, which is a specific DG that is looking at the digital transformation of the European Commission. And so from different angles, the Commission has started to move, and within the DG and employment, certainly one of the major efforts that is ongoing is around the Europass project. So just quickly, Europass is an existing flagship initiative of the Commission. It's been running for 14 years, It is a sort of online portfolio of documents, a collection of documents, including the CV, including the diploma supplement, a language passport, a mobility passport. Now, this platform has been going open heart surgery for several months now, and the new platform will be actually published, revealed in around May. And this new endeavor really is working on a new digital credential infrastructure known as the European Digital Credential, Europass Digital Credential Infrastructure, which is a full-fledged data model that supports credentials, which is made available also for consultation, and it was a work that happened consulting a lot of experts. Some of them are on this call as well, so I encourage them to jump on and add any relevant info. But again, we have a new specification there, and that's going to be extremely important down the road. Now, in parallel, as a result of a major political move known as the European Blockchain Infrastructure Partnership, work happened around designing, you know, what a European blockchain service infrastructure would look like. And that work really led to four different use cases, one of them being on diplomas. And again, that is extremely relevant because, as you have seen, this issue could be tackled at different levels from different angles. And so I'm going to say, make a statement now that should be corrected by people in the call. If I guess the European digital credential infrastructure, you know, is looking at the content, you know, of a credential, I guess the European blockchain service infrastructure is really looking at the envelope layer. And these metaphors could be misleading or helpful, but they are coming from different angles, and there is some coordination. And so hopefully that those two projects will be able to go and develop hand in hand. And those are extremely relevant for, I guess, nowadays. Yeah, so I'd like to also call out a number of projects that, you know, around digital credentials that are happening in Europe. Again, please feel free to edit this document and add more. They're here. I don't want to go over them, but it's a good sign that that there is support and resources to really move this issue along. One of the honorable mentions here that I wanted to touch on is the, an important element of the development around of the credentialing landscape in Europe was the creation of a grassroots movement that was known as the Rome Student Systems and Standards Group. This has probably been outside of your radar scope, but it had a pivotal role in really creating that connection between the abstract standardization work and the practice and the implementation of the standards to create adoption. And RSUG was started in 2007, and to a large extent, it was the seed of several initiatives that, you know, followed that. Particularly, you may have heard of the Groningen Declaration Network, which is not a technical body, but it's really just a global forum where to keep issues around digital student data portability and discuss them at many at different levels. And that spun off as, you know, an established initiative now and with a global reach. And the two projects the European Commission initially funded, MREX and Erasmus Without Papers, were in origin was a project by RSUG known as the Mobility Project. And so some of the same people that were doing this in out of own pocket then ended up being partners and funded by the Commission and then took on that initial intuition into more proper project work. So this is a bit of a flyover what has been happening in Europe I'd like to stop here again and maybe call out to any one of the European colleagues on the call if they wanted to fine-tune things or add to what I said.
Leonard R. is on the queue.
Yeah, hi. Simone, I wonder if you could comment. I know there's a bit about this in one of your links in your document, but one of my biggest concerns here has been the relationship between this work and EIDIS. Because obviously, as I'm sure you're aware, without that alignment, we can't utilize these credentials legally within the EU. So I wonder if you could speak to that.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, a lot of these issues around credentialing then roll up to identity. And to address this particular angle, I would point to the work that has been done, I guess, within the European Blockchain Partnership on sub-sovereign identity, particularly within EBSI. So the IDAS is kind of a regulatory almost framework in Europe around digital identity, and there is ongoing work to really look at that and see how the SSI layer, you know, could be wrapped around it. And there are both national initiatives taking a stab at that, but also more centralized European efforts to really bring SSI into this perspective. Anyone else in the, I don't know, Louise, if you have anything to add to this. I know that's not exactly your use case, but within EBSI or any other of the European colleagues want to add?
I actually do. I'm pretty sure I saw some work recently. I think it's not ready to release fully yet. But not sure, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, Alan Mio, is doing some work in the context of the European SSI framework in EIDIS alignment, specifically around levels of assurance. And so that report will be very interesting for all of us, I'm sure, when that comes out. But yes. People are looking at it for sure, and I'm looking forward to seeing more details about it.
Yep, and I can also say that there's the identity work, sub-sovereign identity work, is, you know, at the European level, is really also looking at other similar initiatives, particularly what's going on in Canada, for example, with the Pan-Canadian Trust Framework. And so there is some collaboration at that level. And this is really starting up. So EIDAS has been around for forever, and now there are more and more initiatives that are trying to use that model and add the SSI element into it. And I don't have full visibility or comprehensive visibility of everything, but certainly Nacho is working on one, and I think he's presenting soon on a webinar around that.
Great. And we have a queue building up. Jim, you're up next.
Simone, you mentioned the there was one of the projects was focused on the envelope. Which one was that? And could you say more about where they are and the timing and status of that?
Yes. So this is one of the use cases under the European Blockchain Service Infrastructure Initiative. And I would actually call on Louis if he's willing to pick up, because he's leading that work, actually.
Yes. Hi there. Yeah. Hello.
Ciao.
Yes. Just let me make a comment before that. Yes, Nacho is Nacho Alamillo, who is the guy leading the legal team. Within EPSI, and together with the EPSI project, but directly linked to that, there's also another project, which is the so-called EIDAS Bridge, which just will let us link two qualified service providers to sign verifiable credentials. And that's how we will be able to extend the eIDAS trust framework to the verifiable credentials landscape, okay? That's one of the things. The other things, you are right, Simone, yes, that's EPSI has standardized, has is the envelope, okay, yes, to containerize and transport the information, and the contents of the credentials are described using the Europass ETCI verifiable credentials standard. Okay, that's Anthony Camilleri is one of the guys leading that. I think he's the one, and he's also connected to the meeting. So maybe he can explain later that in more detail. But yes, at the end, last on February 12th, the first version of EPSI was opened for member states for the testing phase. It's the so-called the piloting phase. And on March on this year, on 24th, there will be a meeting in Brussels in which the overture, the open of all the code will be announced to all member states. It will be open sourced with a European Union open source licensing mode. And all the code will be just open available under GitHub. So anyone can see what's there and use all the code. All libraries and all the code has been is using open source libraries and open source code that's publicly available there also. And there are three key technologies. That's blockchain, social sovereignty, and verifiable credentials. And also EPSI is guaranteeing the independence of the DLTs and also the interoperability between different DLTs. In fact, in this first version of EPSI, there are two DLTs. It's Ethereum Vesu and also Hyperledger Fabric, all on the open source communities versions are used. And the identity is the identity for entities and also for any DAD is based on the Ethereum Vesu platform. And another use case, which is the notarization use case, is all the data, all the documents that will be notarized are on the Hyperledger Fabric DLT. So you are right, EPSI is the envelope and how identities and information should be describe it under verifiable credentials and also extending some of the actual standards. And how to describe any kind of formal, non-formal, non-formal education is being you said the Europass ETCI standard.
Great. Let me see who we have next. It's Blas.
Hello, my name is Blas. I actually introduced myself last time. I'm here is one point which I think is missed. This is one H2020 European Commission project named Digital Europe for All, which is actually going to implement a pilot across a three or four, I think four universities in Europe. And we will actually assess these projects like EPSI and so on. And one of our main points is actually the bridge between AIDAS and self-sovereign identity. So here today, our first team will hear that we have some project, a bridge, AIDAS bridge. And I would please, I don't know, Luis, for more information later. So I think the one project is also have been missed. This is EDU CTX, which is actually in pilot based here in Slovenia between four universities, one from the Germany, one from Czech Republic, and one from Bosnia-Sarajevo, when we actually have implemented system where the credentials actually at the moment can be exchanged between these universities. And this is implemented by blockchain as a ERC-721 token. So that's all. I think this must be notable at this point. Thank you.
Thank you. And Elias Lorino, I think that's you, Luis.
Yeah,
that's me. Go ahead.
Sorry, Kim. I had another call. Which is the question? Sorry.
We can come back. We can come back to you if I just saw you on the queue.
Yeah, and actually, just a reaction to Vlad. Sorry, I'm just reading your name. This is great. I know that in the last couple of years, particularly, there has been an outburst of different initiatives, different projects that are funded by different instruments of the European Commission. And so it would be useful to just use a document, maybe that one that I made available could be a starting point to track all of them. I know that if we go down that route, this may create a huge list of initiatives that, you know, have the one feature, not defect, I say feature, to be connected to funds that come from the Commission. And so there is, you know, always, I think personally, a sustainability issue. And you know, will they create pilots that go well within that consortium and how to scale that or turn that into a mainstream or operation? But hey, but those are certainly to keep track of. And so I, you know, thanks for the contribution and please share.
And next up on the queue, we have Juan.
Oh, hi. Sorry, everyone else already got to everything I was saying. I was just going to add maybe that the IDOS thing for people listening in outside Europe, the IDOS thing is a little uneven from country to country. So countries that have been investing in a lot of identity infrastructure that's IDOS compliant all along have sort of IDOS contractors and companies and private sector parties that are willing to experiment with this stuff or follow closely what's happening in Brussels are at the forefront of this. I'm looking at Spain here, but Germany is, I don't know, desperate to catch up and starting to, at the federal level, fund and incentivize companies to catch up or meet them halfway. So I think, yeah, there's a hopefully this will be less uneven a few years from now. Okay. I cede the floor.
I'm next on the queue. Sorry, I'm trying to figure out what the noise is coming from.
Mute yourself, everybody!
Can everyone mute them? Thank you, that's wonderful. Let's see, I think I'm next on the queue, let me just double check. Okay, yeah, I'll go, and I'm not sure, I think Anthony may not be able, he's on IRC, but he may not be able to talk over voice, but I wanted to mention that I did find some people were asking about some GitHub repos that were referenced, and I don't know why I was just searching the internet for EDCI and verifiable credentials, and then I found this repo, which seemed promising. And what I found really interesting was that they are expressing verifiable credentials as XML, as opposed to, you know, the current formats are JSON and JSON-LP. And this is something I've wondered about a lot, because a lot of the existing schema work, you know, you see XMLs and XSDs, and, you know, verifiable credentials are just a data model. So it's totally valid to use a, an XML representation of that. And that was sort of something I was wondering, as we start progressing more, are we going to find it easier to express some as XML versus JSON, just because of, for whatever reasons, maybe the systems using it or the population using it, population in the sense of the, you know, kind of companies, organizations using it, are just more familiar with it, or the time it takes to port it over to JSON might be, you know, more work. I was curious if, one, if that repo that I found is kind of interesting for people to look at. Like, did I just find someone's scratch repo? Because it certainly looked really useful. And, you know, if there's any kind of context around that, like the sort of design decisions and using XML, et cetera. I think that would be Anthony, but he may not be able to talk. But if anyone has any thoughts on that, Leonard?
Yeah. I just want to follow up.
Actually, Anthony was
Oh, sorry.
Get Anthony.
Oh, is that Anthony? Go ahead.
I thought he was going to be somebody else was speaking too. I was just going to follow up on Anthony's comment in IRC, which is that he's correct that at this point there is no JSON-based signature standard. That is something that's being worked on right now in Etsy. I'm part of the committee that's working on that. So we do have a very, very early draft of a JADES standard to align with the other JADES, CADES, and PADES versions. So that is work in progress, but yeah, he's absolutely right. Today, you would not be able to do that. It wouldn't. It's not a standard yet.
Yes. So, and that's a struggle that a lot of us are experiencing. So, well, okay. So there's JSON, there's verifiable credentials as JSON and JSON-LD, and so JSON-LD. There's a set of signature suites, and then people using JSON are typically using JSON web tokens. And so, you know, but I found it interesting that the reasons behind that, I think that, well, not just sort of the format, but then also the signature suites are kind of reasons that are making JSON formats a little more complicated. So that's really good to know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think it's an issue of complicated. It's an issue of the fact it's just an issue of standardization. None of those things you mentioned, JWS, JWT, you know, et cetera, have been standardized. That's what we're trying to accomplish right now, is to standardize them within the context of the European Commission and the FC standard, signature standard set. I mean, yes, they're W3C standards, but, you know, we need to take them to the EU level.
Okay, great. That is really good to know, actually. Let me see who we have next on the queue. Okay, it's empty now. Any other comments as sort of lingering from that? We had a lot of discussion going on there, and I think someone was trying to speak up. Did we miss out on anything?
Kim, this is Simone. Just a couple of things as we're coming up to the hour. Just as some suggested actions, this, you know, it's arguable, of course, but picking on the EDCI data model, which is on GitHub, that's the official repo, and that's open for logging issues. So this community should take a look at it and maybe log issues, including, you know, the JSON one. And some of the issues that I expect this community would log are the ones that people that have been involved in the project also feel should be addressed, possibly in the next release of, you know, EDCI. So that's one thing. There is a practical low-hanging fruit, you know, as an action, just looking at the EDCI data model and comment on it. The other would be to trace and map all these non-US initiatives and maybe put them within a mapping exercise similar to what AdMatrix has done in the US, or similar to what the credential engine with the ecosystem competency mapping is doing. So extend that to include certainly from Europe, the EDCI, the EBSCI work on diplomas and MRECs. I would start from those three, which are relevant and being used. The other thing that I would suggest is to involve other key experts that may not be in this call and ask them to just deep dive into some of the specifics of whether it's DDCI or MRAC, some of the things that we gave an overview of today. Additionally, the opening up to a global perspective. So outside of Europe, there's one initiative that I'm across that is the Open Search one from Singapore. That could be progressively what one of the tasks of this task force could do, is to really look at the issue globally, understanding that there are two epicenters. One is in Europe and the other one is in North America.
Yes, I think those are great suggestions. I'll touch on a few. So one, the mapping that you talked about, similar to what AdMatrix has, I think there's even there's a good kind of, how do I say, a lot of meat here in from the European perspective. I think there's efforts that are even more mature, and then efforts that we don't even have equivalents of in the U.S. So I think it would be interesting to sort of fill out those categories even more. Next thing, I definitely would like a deep dive on EDCI and the others as well, but the fact that EDCI is in the process of making these kind of design decisions right now and actually building a verifiable credential, I found that really interesting, and I think we could benefit a lot from that conversation. And then, yes, we're trying to get someone soon to talk about open certs. And, it seems like that Singapore effort is probably one of the biggest efforts, but we want to make sure that that's very well represented, too. And, Anthony, glad to know you'd be interested in giving a presentation on that, because we will be reaching out to you soon. And we have 2 minutes left. Any other questions? I think, feel free to add yourself to the queue. I wanted to thank Simone for putting this together and bringing in the relevant experts. I think, for a lot of us outside of Europe, it can seem like an alphabet soup of all these great initiatives, and it's really challenging to fit it all together. So I think it's starting to gel a lot more. And, very excited to be working with you guys on this.
Thank you, Kim. And this is just a starting point. So awesome.
Great. And no one else is on the queue. So I think with that, we will close 1 minute early. Thank you again, everyone.
Thank you.